Hello and welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Robert Johnson, a York Rite Mason and Knight Templar. So the news for this week is something you may have noticed. The link to the Android website is broken. I have been informed that there is a problem with the programming and Google's Android market, but it will be back up shortly. In the meantime, you can download the app from the Amazon.com app store, which is available through the same link. So when you click that link, it'll take you to the Amazon.com Android market, and you can purchase it through there the same as you did before. I apologize for any inconvenience. On the other hand, the Podcast Box app on Apple works just fine. This week, I have a couple of short pieces from MasonicWorld.com. The first is one many of us who are already Masons might find to be interesting, but to the uninitiated, perhaps things you will look for in your potential lodge. And the title of this is called Having a Successful Lodge. Introduction. One of the most important factors contributing to the success of lodges, a well-planned and organized program. Then, it takes work and more work, learning and more planning, to make for real success in a lodge. The building of a successful lodge is largely the responsibility of the worshipful master. He must not only be an excellent presiding officer, but he must be a spiritual guide for the brethren of his lodge, a go-between when necessary, and an instructor in the ritualistic teachings. He must ever be on the alert for ways and means of stimulating interest in the lodge's program. The master is directly responsible for the planning and presentation of activities that will inspire and inform the brethren of his lodge, and thus assure its growth and development. A. First steps is to know your brethren. Number 1. Friendship group. 2. Morality group. 3. Brotherly love group. B. Second step is the preparation stage. For 1. Ritualistic work. 2. The bylaws. 3. The MWP-HGL code. 4. Increase your Masonic knowledge and skills. 5. Be faithful to the lodge and your brethren. C. Election. Third step is making the planning stage. Number 1. Staff meeting, secretary and treasurer. Going over bank cards, Grand Lodge reports, bank statements, checkbook, receipt book, member ledger, financial cards and rituals, delinquent dues, dropped from the rolls, death benefits, and procedures. Another note, emphasis is placed on the fact that the master must know his men and must not, under any circumstances, place brethren in positions or on committees merely because of likes. He must put men in these places of responsibility who have the best qualifications for the position, not popularity. 2. The staff meeting, senior and junior wardens. Explain your duty and their duties. Develop a communication channel, appointment of officers, and establish committees and a chairman for each. Ask these 5 questions. Number 1. Devotion. Is he devoted to his work, and does he genuinely like to do this type? 2. Dependability. All of his capabilities are no good if he cannot be trusted to carry through. Determination. Is he determined to do a good job and not easily discouraged? 4. Is diligence. Is he diligent in his performances by taking advantage of every opportunity for improvement and pushing on? Delightfulness. This is the most important question of all. No matter how capable, efficient, or brilliant he is, if he is not a nice person to work with, he will never be a successful leader. Delightful has to do with the disposition and personality. 3. Staff meeting. All officers and committees and chairmen. Ritualistic opening and closing ceremonies. Go over duties of appointed officers, duties of committees, sick and charity, attendance, membership and expansion, investigation, Masonic education, public relations, youth, relief, employment, and welcoming. Note, the worshipful master who is proficient knows the duties of each officer. He is alert for any evidence of dissension, misunderstanding, or lack of interest in the lodge, and he must remain within the lodge spirit of harmony and cooperation, which can only be done through understanding and confidence. Part D, Activities for the Year. The Trestle Board. Continuing projects of the lodge, previous events, successful or not successful, and go over the year's pre-scheduled activities, establish goals, membership, scholarship, charity projects, Grand Lodge programs, meet and brief the past masters. Another note, the master should insist that each officer and chairman be present, and if it is absolutely impossible for an officer or chairman to attend, that person should give his reason to the master before the staff meeting. Normally, if the master has told his officers of the necessity for holding staff meeting prior to the regular business meeting of the lodge, he will encounter very little difficulty in getting them to attend. Organizing an agenda for all meetings. First, set down prerequisites for a good program, which, for example, could be planning and lots of it ahead of time. Persistency and patience. The best program uses as many members as possible. Present a program to the lodge only when every detail has been worked out thoroughly. Create an interest and create personal supervision. In summary, the position of worshipful master of a Masonic lodge is draped with honor, clothed with authority, cloaked with responsibilities, and adorned with obligations. It pays no wages in the coin of the realm, yet it offers to the worthy a wealth of experience. To the weak it lends strength, to the strong it teaches humility, to the vain it offers glory, and to the faithful an opportunity to serve mankind. I found that short piece to be helpful, if nothing else. The next piece is entitled A Good Story. A young man passed a pawnbroker's shop. The moneylender was standing in front of his shop, and the young man noted that he was wearing a large and beautiful Masonic emblem. After going on a whole block, apparently lost in thought, the young man turned back, stepped up to the pawnbroker, and addressed him. "I see you're wearing a Masonic emblem. I'm a Freemason, too. It happens that I'm desperately in need of $25 just now. I shall be able to repay it within 10 days. You don't know me, but I wonder whether the fact that you are a Freemason and that I am a Freemason is sufficient to induce you to lend me the money on my personal note." The pawnbroker mentally appraised the young man, who was clean-cut, neat, and well-dressed, and after a moment's thought, he agreed to make the loan on the strength of the young man being a Freemason. Within a few days, the young man repaid the loan and agreed, and that ended the transaction. About 4 months later, the young man was in a lodge receiving the Entered Apprentice degree. He had not really been a Mason when he borrowed the $25. After he had been admitted for the second section of the degree, the young man looked across the lodge room and saw the pawnbroker from whom he had borrowed the $25. His face turned crimson, and he became nervous and jittery. He wondered whether he had been recognized by the pawnbroker. Apparently not. So he planned at the first opportunity to leave the lodge room and avoid his benefactor. As soon as the lodge was closed, he moved quickly for the door, but the pawnbroker had recognized the young man, headed him off, to the young man's astonishment, approached him and greeted him with a smile and an outstretched hand. "Well, I see you weren't a Freemason after all when you borrowed that $25, the pawnbroker commented. The blood rushed to the young man's face as he stammered, "No, I wasn't, but I wish you'd let me explain. I had always heard that Freemasons were charitable and ready to aid a brother in distress. When I passed your shop that day, I didn't need that $25. I had plenty of money in my wallet, but when I saw the Masonic emblem that you were wearing, I decided to find out whether the things I had heard about Freemasonry were true. You let me have the money on the strength of my being a Freemason, so I concluded that what I had heard about Masons was true, that they are charitable, that they do aid brethren in distress. That made such a deep impression on me that I presented my petition to this lodge, and here I am. I trust that with this explanation you will forgive me for having lied to you." The pawnbroker responded, "Don't let that worry you too much. I wasn't a Freemason when I let you have the money. I had no business wearing the Masonic emblem you saw. Another man had just borrowed some money on it, and it was so pretty that I put it on my lapel for a few minutes. I took it off the moment you left. I didn't want anyone else borrowing the money on the strength of my being a Mason. When you asked for that $25, I remembered what I had heard about Masons, that they were honest, upright, and cared for the obligations promptly. It seemed to me that $25 wouldn't be too much to lose to learn if what I had heard was really true. So I lent you the money, and you repaid it, exactly as you said you would. That convinced me that what I'd heard about Masons was true, so I presented my petition to the Lodge. I was the candidate just ahead of you. That's from the January issue of New Mexico Freemason in 1977. This week's famous Freemason is David Crockett, King of the Wilderness, a legend in his own time. By 1836, Davy Crockett shared billing with Jim Bowie as one of the two most famous men west of the Appalachians. Born on October 17, 1786 in northeastern Tennessee, he ran away from the home at age 12 because of his dislike of school. He returned home 3 years later and paid for his own education. Crockett was the archetype of the American frontiersman and was famous for his ability to shoot the flame off a candle at 100 yards. He once killed 105 bears in a single season, some with a knife. After serving two terms in the state legislature, Crockett was elected to the U.S. Congress in 1827, 1829, and 1833. Popular for his honesty and homespun forthrightness, he loudly opposed President Jackson's mistreatment of the Indians, following his defeat in the election of 1835. An angry Crockett told his Tennessee constituents, "You all can go to hell. I'm going to Texas." On February 8, 1836, Davy and his 12 Tennessee boys rode into the Alamo. His tall tales and quick wit held the morale of the men high during the worst days of the siege. On the morning of March 6, as Mexicans finally overwhelmed the Alamo garrison, Davy Crockett was among the last to die. Proof that Crockett was a Mason is based mainly on the survival of his Masonic apron, made for him by Mrs. A.C. Macy of Washington, D.C., during his tenure in Congress. Before leaving for Texas, he entrusted the apron to the sheriff of Weakley County, Tennessee, and it was inherited and preserved by the sheriff's nephew, E.M. Taylor, Paddock, Kentucky. The lodge at Weakley County near the Crockett home burned during the Civil War, destroying all of the lodge records. That's from the Texas Mason by Pete Normand, Past Master, Texas Lodge of Research. That's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, we are on Facebook, and if you like the show, you can actually listen to it right there on the Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter at Whence Came You, and add us to your circle on Google Plus to email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. For more episodes, links to the RSS, and much more, visit the website at www.wcypodcast.blogspot.com. Have a wonderful week, everyone. And for Whence Came You, Robert Johnson.